Once again, you know, Willoughby Design and I collaborate, and I'm like, let's take this physical press kit and make it digital so I don't have to give, you know, get it printed again and everything. I can just add stuff really easily, and they said, okay, we'll do that.
Kev, that's another thing that it's so cool having this less than 6 degree separation from you all these years. 2 years ago, I was in Cincinnati doing the being on the judge jury for the International Design Awards for Howe, and I was on with Anne. And just before we left, she calls me and she's like, "Can you swing up to the room real quick?" I swung up, went and said hello. She sat down, we talked for a bit, and she gave me a copy of the book that inspired yours.
Oh yeah, Gordon.
Exactly. She gave me her copy.
Of the original printing. The original print.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at mine right now.
That blew me away, man.
Yeah, and that's why my books are designed like his with the leather.
And that's what she explained.
That was my nod to Gordon.
That was so cool. So it's cool all these years and in so many different realms, like we talked, you know, shoes and with Dwayne and with track and sports and then design and creative life to still be connected all these years, man. That's special to me.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I mean, it is. So it's all good. So we've been recording, I hope.
Welcome everybody to the Reflex Blues Show. Yes, we have been.
He's tricky.
Recording of some sort. And with that, everybody, I have with me a frequent co-host over here, Steve Gordon.
How you doing, everybody?
And via the magic of the internets.
Internets. Los
interwebs.
Yeah. On the other sides of the interwebs.
The tubes.
The dirty side of Portland over there. We bring us...
I'm not in the dirty pearl, but the dirty dirty.
The okay. Dirty.
We got with us Kevin Carroll. Kevin, it's been a while. Welcome back.
Absolutely. I know. Donovan, gosh, that was when actually Anne and I were on stage together, wasn't it? When we did our interview,
I think it was. I think you probably just got off stage.
Yeah.
I think you'd been off stage probably for 20 minutes before we saw you.
It was in Denver.
Yeah, and it's been well. June will be like four years.
If it was Denver, that's 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
So and Anne Willoughby this year, she's getting the AIGA medal.
Is she really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And the
only, didn't she get it already?
Well, she'd gotten a I don't know when the ceremony is.
Yeah. I know I think she got the announcement came out.
Yeah, the announcement came out cuz you know, if you got $2,000 you can go to it or whatever they charge, but
oh,
yeah.
So you're headed there.
Oh, yeah. That's just regular luncheon. No, actually I think it's less than that. But I got to get to New York, so
yeah,
but,
true.
So I will. But I think the only shocker was she didn't have one from 10 years ago.
That's true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah. I owe so much to Willoughby Design and to Anne on so many levels as far as it relates to my brand, my work, the inspiration that they provided, not just in design, but just as human beings, talking and encouraging each other and challenging each other. Yeah, Anne is my CEO, my chief encouragement officer of my dreams, for sure.
I love it.
What have you guys and Willoughby been working on together? Anything recently? Or anything that just came out?
Yeah, nothing recently. I mean, we just did a little subtle update of the press kit that we did, the physical press kit. We reimagined it in a digital version, and so just makes it a little more seamless to be able to put any new updates and things like that. So they were... instrumental in me being able to reimagine the way that I would share my updates as far as what I'm doing publicly and what's going on in my journey of book and ball and betterment. And so, yeah, so that's the latest. But, you know, we did the three books together. We did all of my brand direction and brand vision together. We've been on stage together. I mean, I've performed for her at, you know, her locale in Kansas City numerous times and helped her team reimagine or reaffirm or whatever you want to call it kind of deal with them. So, yeah, Willoughby Design and I are always connected at the hip in some way, shape, or form, from inspiration to creativity to innovative thought to just, you know, the idea of advancing the human condition.
That's wonderful. Where do people go to see this digital press kit? Like, where do our listeners, if they want to, you know, dig around and peruse what you've been up to?
You gotta connect with me, but because of our relationship, Donovan and Steve, I will be sending that to you, and you'll be able to give it a nice little peruse and share with the listener.
Nice.
Okay. So go to the post for this podcast at 36 Point, and we'll have a link there to the digital press kit that it is.
Yeah, right. I'll give you some things. I haven't added a couple things, so I'll just give you the direct link to some of the TED Talks and some recent commercial things that I've done here in Portland. And so it'll be fun. It'll be a nice way to take a break from time to time. And, you know, maybe it'll re-energize people. That's the hope of it. And get them to think about how they tell their stories, how they tell the stories of others, and how they're really in the business of storytelling and the many ways that we can deliver stories.
No, that's great.
Amazing.
So you got any new books on the way out, or it's kind of the trilogy kind of set as it is?
No, the trilogy is set, but I've been slowly putting together a children's book idea, and it's really a nod to my first CEO, Miss Lane, who everyone at Howe and Steve and Donovan, I don't know if I've ever shared anything about her, but Miss Lane was my best friend's mom, who became my mom at the age of 9, basically. And
okay.
She was my mentor, friend, challenger, person to hold me accountable for any of those whimsical, ridiculous, crazy ideas, audacious thoughts I might have. And she passed away last year, August, at 83. And so in reflecting on our 46-year-long friendship, I started thinking about, well, how could I honor that? And I thought about different conversations we had, and we actually had a chance to interview her and get that captured a few years ago. So I've got this beautiful footage of us sitting in her home just the way we did when I was a kid and she was younger. And so it was really nice. I haven't pulled that footage out or done anything with it, but I'm thinking about doing a children's book on a lot of the simple truths that she shared with me throughout all the years, and looking at them being like bedtime stories. So I'm thinking about this working title, I Have a Wonder, 11 Bedtime Stories to Live By.
Well, that'd be incredible.
That's what I hope the listeners get. I've realized that the moment we met years ago, which would be, oh my goodness, almost 10 years ago in New Orleans at the Howe Conference.
Yeah.
You document life actively. You don't float aimlessly. Whether you use the things immediately or not, you have a very unique knack of paying attention to the details and storing them away for the time that they will be used. Not if, but when. And as creatives of any type, I think that's highly important.
It's funny, right? There's a thin line between hoarder and curator.
There you go.
So I'm a curator at heart, right?
That's absolutely. Absolutely.
I do have purpose behind the stuff at some point. I just don't know what it is. but I do. It's so funny. Someone would say to me, they came into my office and they said, my gosh, it's like, You're a well orchestrated and strategic hoarder. And I said, I'm a curator.
There you go.
And I said, everything that I actually hold on to, I really do think it will have another life. It will have another story to tell. And so I'm really deliberate in what I do hold on to. And lo and behold, those things do end up having a new reimagined purpose. And I actually, you know, it's so funny. I forgot to tell you that I have done my ball collection and all my artifacts, the things we're talking about that I've collected over the years, became an art exhibit.
Nice. And
so I traveled it for the last 2 years. It just returned to me from a stay at the University of Oklahoma on the campus there at the Natural History Museum, the Sam Noble History Museum. So it was in St. Louis at the Center of Creative Arts for 3 months during the Olympic Games in 2012. And then it came to Portland in the summer of 2013 for 4 months, and then it was in Norman, Oklahoma, on the campus of the University of Oklahoma from the fall of 2013 to just returning back to me here in late January, early February. And it's really, I like to say it was my visual and experiential memoir. So people always ask me about, am I going to write a memoir? I said, no, I built one.
That's amazing.
Were you kind of, I assume you're happy to see your collection back, but you're also like, man, now I got to store this again? I kind of liked it. I kind of like the museums doing the work.
Got in space, but what's nice is, you know, those natural history museums, those guys are just remarkable in the way they package stuff back up. So I don't know if I ever want to take it out of the box. It's so precise, and they set this inventory that just, you know, makes you just like sit in awe and look at the detail and everything. So I don't know. I think I've got a new exhibit in my office of just like storing things properly. Yeah.
Nice.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about our latest project. All right. Well, the other reason we wanted to bring you back is the two things I remember from when we chatted close to 4 years ago was the one thing you said was sometimes ideas do take time to create and to happen. And the other thing is that you told everyone that, you know, I mean, your job title is like catalyst. And to me, it's kind of this abstract format, but it's basically, you know, you go in and make a project better, but may or may not do anything on it. And so I have had now firsthand experience in both of these things with you. So I want to thank you for that. And that is our YA design project, which we announced, we premiered a couple weeks ago, and the second one will go live the week after the show.
No, it's been interesting, our journey just on this project. And I think I was so energized and enthusiastic after our conversation in Denver at HAL conference. And I said, you should do something with this. This should be something bigger than this. And I don't know what it is, but you guys need to think about it, right? And you said, that's a good idea. And then, you know, life happens, right? Life gets in the way. But it was interesting how we'd have a little conversation annually, or you text me or something, Donovan, and you said, I'm still thinking about it. It's still percolating. I'm thinking about it, right? And like you said, sometimes ideas, you know, they have to have time to marinate or take root, whatever metaphor you want to use. But I think what you did really well was you didn't allow it to just die on the vine, if you tossed aside and never be unearthed again. And I think you put it in what I like to say, the proverbial design wastebasket. Nothing gets thrown away. It's just waiting for its right moment. So you just kind of put it aside. You never throw it away.
Oh, thanks. And for those listeners who haven't followed and stuff, what happened was when we met in Denver, it was just a crazy HAL conference. And there's some great things that and there are at every HAL conference, but it's one of these, everyone's experience is a little different. And by chance, we were hanging out with a lady who decided to basically quit her job because she was allowed to go to HAL instead of actually doing it.
That's right.
And
then
we were talking to Kevin about that. And then Kevin had, I think in between talking to Ann Willoughby on stage and coming to speak to us, I think you had a little chat with a guy who went by DJ Noah.
Yep. DJ Noah. Absolutely. And because he had done the party the night before.
Yeah, because there wasn't an after party.
Yep.
Yeah, it's exactly. And he remember he printed up his own little cards and was handing them out, and people didn't know who he was, but they showed up.
Yeah, he skipped the whole last day of the conference to go to Kinko's and design flyers. And then he DJ'd a party that he threw at a bar that he had only been at the night before.
Yep, and they let him have the bar and everything, and
people. Place was packed. We were there.
It was packed.
Yep.
And he said that it was the talk, but nobody knew who was. They thought it was a HAL sanctioned party.
Yeah, he just went all in.
It predated the whole idea of raves, right?
Yep.
He was ahead of the game.
But so the whole idea was, is there's this great energy when creatives get together, but then the rest of the year, you know, maybe there should be something that's just like kind of positive and energetic and just remind people. And that was the whole idea. And then Kevin's like, we should work together on this. And we said, great, we have no idea what we're going to do.
That sounds like all most conversations. It's like, this is awesome. All right, see you later.
Yeah. But then, so what happened was, over the course of a year or 2 years, I finally realized that, well, maybe the whole idea, what if we boil it down to, because the other thing is I wanted to make sure that whatever we did was something we could do more than just once.
Right.
And so I was like, it needs to be something that can be maintained. And then Nate moved to Kansas City on us. So, yeah. And then, but during this time I came up with this idea that what if we just call it, I found out whydesign.com was available, which just goes to our 36 point, by the way.
There you go.
And the whole idea is if, well, what burns you, what, like when I get burned out mm-hmm. from this profession, mm-hmm. you do when you work in it.
Yeah.
The whole idea is what if you just remember why you got in the profession? Well, and that's normally, and I mean, you remember why you love it.
And the simplicity of it is, as I watched right here with you, we watched an upcoming episode, if you will. And you know it's a good idea when immediately I'm like, ooh, 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 ask me, you know? I'm like the kid in the back of the class whose hand has been up so long that now he's leaning over and his hand is resting on his head and he's just waving it, please call on me, because I'm like, oh, I can tell you why I design. So that's where, you know, it's gonna take root. It's gonna spark, and it's good. It's a great idea.
And I did realize that Kevin really is a catalyst. Like, he made the whole project better.
It's better. He's a wizard, man. He's a wizard. It's not even fair how he can do that.
Who knew? Who knew? No. So, you know what? When you guys are just talking about people remembering why and hearing that, I think so many times what we need to do is take pause to feed ourselves, right? What's sustenance for your creative soul? And I think creatives really need to think about that. What are the things that energize me? What are the things that replenish my energy stores so that I can go at it another day? And don't think that just because you have a title in the creative realm, that's enough. You have to take care of yourselves because no one else will do it, especially if you're in a physical organization that you didn't create, right? So if you're working in a normal, traditional kind of setting, be it an agency, an industry organization or whatever, where they have creative endeavors or efforts, they're not feeding you. You have to take the responsibility. And so this program really is one of those great resources to feed you and to allow you to take pause to reflect on why I do this and what I need to do to ensure that I'm at my level best every day to bring it.
Absolutely. What's interesting is I've in talks that I've given to kids and upcoming students or younger professionals or even some of my colleagues, that's the one thing that often comes up that I talk about a lot is inspiration versus motivation. And a lot of times we're waiting for some magic wand to tap us on the head when, if we think a few years back to the very interesting younger people that we were being fueled by so many things. And design as a profession, although it became our profession, it wasn't the reason. And I think we, like you said, we lose sight of why and what's fueling us versus the timeline, the deadline, the award show, the conference even. And it's like, you know, it's not something that eats or feeds itself. We actually get a lot of that fuel from that much bigger life. Some of it, most of it, not design related.
Mm-hmm. No, that's so true. And I think we have to be aware of the things. It's not always going to be design related, but it is going to be things that help to inspire us, right? And it's part of who we are. That's the makeup of our mosaic of our creative self. And could be in any number of things. I look at my items that I need to have around me, and I've shared this on stage from time to time that, you know, books are very important to me, and I love reading, and the whole idea that reading makes you better. And so I'm a voracious reader and a seeker of knowledge that way. But I also love classical music and music in general. But I have two cellos at home, and I saw a way every time, you know, I can get an opportunity. I don't practice enough, my teacher says, but I do enjoy it. And so that's another one of those pleasures that re-energizes me. And then
you know, my constant search for the best dark chocolate caramel sea salts, man. So
there you go.
Around the globe, and people send that stuff to me. So yeah, so I mean, those three things I have to keep readily available and nearby, and that's when I always know I'm grounded, right? I have my blankie, if you will, as it relates to my creative energy.
Right. I think my mantra is that creativity is a life skill, so that I separate the ability and the task and the practice of being creative from the artwork. Because I think so many times those get mushed together. Like, oh, he's creative because he can draw. Or, oh, he's creative because he's imaginative. Yeah, but if you think about it, creativity, you know, it's the when you think of the phrase, you know, necessity being the mother of all invention, that kind of thing. You know, creativity, it, at our most basic level, was about staying alive, about perpetuating life and the things we need. And if we couldn't find it, we made it. And so that's the thing that I like to keep in mind also.
No, that's true. I mean, yeah, well, because it was out of necessity you were being, you know, creative, innovative, being a problem solver, which is really what I look at what we're doing many times.
Absolutely.
Problem.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, sometimes out of necessity and survival, sometimes out of curiosity and inquisitiveness. And I think that's all part of it, too. So,
yeah.
Depending on what the brief is, quote unquote, right? The saber-toothed tiger is chasing us. We need to do something about that.
Exactly.
Right? No, I mean, right? I've got to. We show.
Or, you know, some other things. So, yeah, so I think that's, you know, or there's how can we make a better whatever?
Yeah, yeah. Like fire was heat and light. It wasn't, you know, for roasting marshmallows.
I think a lot of our best design solutions aren't necessarily the best designs. They're just that. Oh, you did this on a budget of $0 or you were stuck with this color palette and this existing logo from a client and you were able to make it look like this.
Absolutely.
It's a lot more of a design challenge than a blank canvas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. I think that's exactly what we were really looking at. It was whatever that design challenge or brief was, you actually designed to the brief, right? And sometimes it was exactly what it needed to be. Other times you were exceeding the expectations of it.
Yeah. I think that's why the blank slate is so hard to design to, because it's not, we haven't been presented with a problem at that point. There's nothing to solve for. So X stays X, you know?
Well, that's why this project took 4 years. So, but the other key part about it was, about a year ago, Nicholas Burrows is in the office, and I explained to him to where it kind of was on the project, and he was the one guy that looked at me and just said, like, I totally get it. I could tell he was on.
Nice.
And so he actually wrote half the questions with me and actually did almost all of the editing and the design of the project. So
very cool.
He also brought in Craig Hughes, who wrote original music. So
nice.
But that's when it actually started moving. So, but even then, we recorded these things at last year's How.
Yeah, that's what you were saying.
So even then, it took us 10 months.
Production value, man.
Yeah,
fine wine.
Well, we just had recordings.
You had content. You still had content, though. That's okay. You can collect. Make sure you have content for the next show.
There you go.
Right, and that was one where it was one of these design solutions where, like, well, we have these audios, but we have no idea what to do with them. So
right.
then we brought in Craig to write music, and we started talking, and The final things you can see on the 36 Point YouTube channel, or just go to 36point.com and you'll see them there.
Well, like Kevin said, content is king. If you can have the best bucket in the world, if you don't have anything to fill it, that's the tough part.
And then also, I also would, you know, add to that, context, right, is the thing that really draws people in.
Absolutely. That's the story. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So you can have the content, but if you don't have context, you're not going to draw people in. It's not going to be intriguing and compelling.
Great point.
So we're so ADDDDDDDD now, right? So everybody's just launching, right? So you have to have a way of breaking through that with people, and that's the context.
True.
Right.
True.
That's the meaning behind it, the story behind it. I think that's one of the key things.
Yeah, how they connect to it.
Okay, well, we're going to take one final break, and we'll be right back with Kevin Carroll. All right, welcome back. So,
We got Kev there?
Yeah, we got Kev.
Nice. Yeah, it went quiet for a second. I was like,
I didn't know what. I thought he was getting ready to say something else. He was going to like announce the show. And what's going on? I thought he had more information to share.
Oh, yeah, we're just going to start. We're just going to start recording the show now.
Right. That was the pre-show.
Yeah, that's the pre-show.
I was trying to.
We're moving to like a 4-hour long format, like a daily talk show.
Exactly. That's what I was preparing for, so I didn't
know.
Love it.
So, Anna, let's talk about this ball collection you've got. You talk about necessity, and I know you have some that are made of, I mean, part of the reason it's a thing is it's not like people went to the store and just bought these. You collect these. They're made of, like, different items, right? What's the one that you have that sells that necessity thing the most, do you think?
Oh gosh, I mean, they all have a uniqueness to them, and that really speaks to the necessity of play and how it really is hardwired in us. And, you know, the whole idea, the title of the art exhibit was We All Speak Ball, and how we're all connected in play. And so I don't think there's any one. It's like I always told people would say, what's your favorite? I said, it's like your children. You can't say which one's your favorite, right? Right. You know, publicly, even though you might want to say your favorite a little more. But I think the banana fiber ball from Uganda is really, really clever because they're basically using the fibers from a tree to create a ball. And the ball is the ultimate in sustainability. It unravels and disintegrates as you play with it. And the only time that you really do something, you alter it, is you actually, when it's raining, they would put it in a plastic bag if they could find one to waterproof it. But other than that, they don't do anything else. And so you would always know when the game was over because the ball would be gone. It would be disintegrating.
Wow.
So there's something beautiful in that idea. Then you know, repeat, make another one and start the game again. But I just think that when you think about the necessity of play, how we're hardwired, all the great empirical research out there and data supporting that, I just always say to people, just don't marginalize play. Don't push it to the weekends. Find those things that bring you joy and keep them close and celebrate it on a regular basis, because it's at the root of innovation, creativity, problem solving, abstract thinking, ingenuity, all the things we're being challenged and tasked with delivering on a daily basis now in the world we're living in.
It's very interesting that you say that I recently was asked to be on a committee to do some work, and the one thing that I had a really loud voice about was just that. Like, don't put the creatives in a room and assume that we're the kids with crayons because no one else likes to play. And that's a very good point that you make, is that it's at the root of what people actually want, what businesses, companies, clients, colleagues, it's what we want, but it's often reduced to childishness and put in that category. And so don't play around, don't mess about, you know, be about your work, when actually the play, the result of play, is what they're looking for.
Yes. And it's also interesting, you know, what Dr. Brown always talks about, the opposite of play isn't work, it's depression. Mm. And he points that out, right? That they, you know, work and play. No, it's actually, if you're not playing, you're going to be depressed. Right?
Wow.
And so that's very, that should make you take pause, right?
Absolutely.
About the fact that if you're not making time for something that helps you de-stress, it will begin to weigh on you more and more. And I think that's, if you need anything to be the impetus to get out and go do something or find something that brings you joy, there you go, right there.
That's really interesting that you say that, because, yeah, so many times in common, you know, common knowledge or common thought in popular culture and society, we do put work and play as the antithesis of each other, when actually it's, you know, play as a result of, or if you equate play with joy and happiness, then depression would be its antithesis.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Wow.
We're trying to manage and try to stay away from, so I just think that the more and more that we really do hearken back to simple joys and things that really were instrumental in how we dealt with, how we communicated, how we connected, it all started in our youth, and it all was there in those very simple moments of our play and our joy, and how we got people, we invited people, we were inclusive. we were communicative around it, right? We really told great stories about what we just were involved in or what we just saw, and we shouldn't lose that. And, you know, Steve, you said it really best when you said it's not just the work of creatives. We all have this in us.
Yeah.
Creatives are fortunate enough to not allow it to completely atrophy and right. go away from their life, but most people allow it to atrophy. We all have the capacity for it.
Absolutely.
But you just... creative people and people who work in the creative industries, they get a chance to keep it strong and agile and nimble more so than the rest of the population. But everyone has the need for it and everyone has the ability to do it.
And a slight footnote to that for everyone listening. As you were talking, I was thinking about it. What would be the antithesis of work? In a scientific sense, it's rest. So it's yeah. work and rest. It's not work and play.
Yeah.
Huh.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Yeah. And rest could be someone's play for that moment, right? They need that to recharge. And that could be the play they need, right?
So or yeah,
right.
or play is what they do when they're resting.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. But it does allow you to separate play and not reduce it to not working.
Hmm. Well said. Yeah, well said. Yep, exactly. Yeah. And in sports, as you know, Steve, there's active rest.
Absolutely. It's one of the most crucial things. Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't completely shut down because it's too hard to ramp back up.
Absolutely. You just have
active rest time, right?
That's Dennis Rodman on the bike on the side of the ball game, right?
That's it. That's it. That's
yep.
it.
Yep.
Yeah. That's the Dennis Rodman with the, you know, the Bulls. We're not talking Dennis Rodman North Korea.
No,
That's Dennis Rodman when he's got his towel on and he's laying on the floor stretching while the game is still going.
I just remember it'd be like, oh, he's worn down. So you'd be on the side running the stationary bike, and you're like, what?
Right.
But now it makes sense.
He's keeping it active.
Yeah.
Yep, he was. He's absolutely keeping it primed and ready. Yep, yep. That's exactly it.
Yep.
Oh, that's great stuff, man. That's great stuff.
No, well, Kevin, we really appreciate you you taking the time for us. So how is everything out there in Portland? We're being teased with spring. We see a day here and there, but then it keeps going back.
Yeah, how the roses doing out there?
Everything is in full bloom, and it's getting the requisite amount of liquid sunshine it needs to do that.
Nice.
All right.
Actually, that's all you need to say about Portland to understand what's going on.
Well, the funny thing is, give it about 3 days, and we'll have whatever weather you have out there.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm just giving you the information ahead of time. It's on its way to you.
I love it, Kevin Carroll as forecaster.
Exactly. That is exactly what I'm trying to do for you guys. I'm gonna keep you ahead of the game, leading edge. Right. That's what it's all about.
Love it. It's really the only reason you're on the show.
That's exactly what it is.
Find out what the weather forecast is going to be like in about 3 days.
Yeah, it's like what's happening, you know, up the plains for us to know what we should be, you know, anticipating and getting ready for. So you're ahead of the game once again.
There you go.
And he only agreed to be on the show because we're 2 hours ahead of him, so he wants to know what the future is going to be like.
He lives in the future.
Exactly. Wait, remember when there was the whole, what was the end of the world thing that was going to happen?
Oh, yeah, the Y2K.
Yeah, no, the one that was just recent was like it was going to be.
Oh, the Mayan prophecy.
The Mayan prophecy. Yeah. So I actually called my buddy in Australia. I said, if they don't answer, we're
you know, you know what happened.
Yep. So I sent the text and I called them and they responded back. I said, We're good.
And they said, it's 3 a.m. We want to go back to bed.
Right.
We're good. They answered. So they, and my friend laughed. He said, of course you would call us here in Australia to check.
The future.
And everybody do that.
Yeah. It's the smart thing to do.
I'm shocked CNN. Yeah, I mean, they probably sent a few people out.
Yeah. You got to go out there.
Yeah.
The Reflex Blue Show with Donovan Beery is hosted at 36point.com. Music by Dustlab. Find out more at myspace.com/dustlab.